Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels. Our guest this episode, we have Jake Romanek on the show. Jake and his dad, Mark, they host Fishing 411 TV. Many of you are probably going to be familiar with that name. They're also, they're on TV. You can find them on YouTube. They produce some of the best walleye content out there these days. And they're from Michigan, centrally located in and around the Great Lakes out there. They spend a lot of time on the Great Lakes, and they spend a lot of time trolling. So that's the better part of this conversation. We get to know Jake a little bit. It is the first time having him on the JMO Podcast, so it's fun to get to know him. But then we quickly transition into cold water trolling. I think this is going to be a great conversation, very educational and very applicable potentially to this particular spring where we're looking at the potential for an early ice out, which, you know, out here in the Dakotas, you can target walleyes year-round, a lot of river systems. There's a lot of places that we can get a boat on the water and target walleyes in the spring. And if there's an early ice out, that doesn't mean the water's just going to warm up and the fish are going to rush to spawn. We might have a pretty elongated spring season where the water temps stay chilly. And you know what? We're enjoying these fishing opportunities. There's no better way to cover water and learn about wherever you are fishing and to sometimes catch fish when they're scattered out than trolling. So that is what that is the intentions behind this interview. And Jake has all the details. So let's get to it. Cold water trolling with Jake Romanek. Let's do it. This JMO podcast is brought to you by Cedar Lake Sales in West Bend, Wisconsin. Cedar Lake Sales is Southern Wisconsin's largest Crestliner dealership, so whatever you're looking for, whether it's something family-oriented or a pontoon, maybe you're looking for a traditional fishing boat or step it up to something that you can travel around and fish tournaments in, they are well-known to have it all easy to check out in their huge indoor heated showrooms. Now, with a great service department and the confidence of their customers, Cedar Lake Sales is celebrating 55 years of trusted business. Again, if you are shopping for a boat, your shopping is not done until you've talked to a salesperson at Cedar Lake Sales. For more information on what they got, what they offer, head to the link in the description of this podcast. That's www.cedarlakesales.com. This episode is brought to you by Devil's Lake, North Dakota. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. How would you describe your sort of like your upbringing in fishing, like where are you from, your home bodies of water, some of those fishing experiences super early on that you can remember that would just kind of help us get to know you or help kind of describe you as an angler, today? Go ahead.
Yeah, for sure. So I would say, I mean, I got to give the Cliff Note version of my story as much as we possibly can. But, you know, fishing has been in my blood from day one, as long as I can remember. My dad's been an outdoor writer for going on 38, 39 years, and he transitioned 19 years ago into television. My uncle is Gary Parsons. My other uncle is Keith Gavias. My cousin's Chase Parsons. So as far as, and of course, my dad being Mark Romanek, of course, I didn't feel like I had much of a choice. I mean, walleyes basically run through our blood. You didn't have to twist my arm very hard, but getting to grow up with some of the biggest names in the walleye industry, I just was been a sponge. I mean, I try to absorb as much information as I possibly can. Getting opportunities to fish with people like that has just been incredible. And so I feel like my foot in the door was pretty big getting into this industry from that. But I mean, basically when I was in kindergarten and your kindergarten teacher goes, "Hey, what do you want to be when you grow up?" I said I wanted to be my dad. And I never grew up. I've always wanted to fish, and I always wanted to be in this industry. So after high school, I went to college for just a couple of years, taking some core classes, business management, marketing type classes, because there really isn't a degree in professional fishing, but there is a degree in running a business. And so I wanted to be a little bit more savvy as far as business goes. And after a couple of years of college, I felt like I got the classes that I wanted under my belt, came right back and started working full time for Fishing 411 TV, which has been airing on the Sportsman's Channel and World Fishing Network for 18 years. We're currently shooting season 19 right now.
Man. Yeah, dude. Like you said, it's like you were just born with big walleye swimming through your veins. I love it. you know, it's and so I'm going to take a hard pivot into the fishing. I want to cover as much ground as we can. But I just, you know, knowing where you're from and where a lot of your experiences are, just help us interpret some of this information for those of us that maybe aren't from there or haven't necessarily fished or might not fish where you fish and where we're going to talk about. But I still feel like interpreting the information and just learning from you, we can take, you know, stuff like this anywhere and help us get better catching fish. I messaged you just like literally a couple days ago and said, would you come on and talk about cold water trolling? Because I feel like this year, you know, in the Midwest with like inland lakes, not even talking Great Lakes, but like, you know, just throughout the Midwest, we're projecting a pretty early spring. There's big portions of the, you know, the southern end of the Midwest that already has open water. I'm even talking on small inland lakes, right? It's like early ice out, but it's not like spring spawn yet, or it's not going to be. I mean, so there's going to be a cold water fishing season here for a lot of people, especially areas where the walleye, you know, as far as walleye fishing, where walleyes you can fish for them, like the border waters in Minnesota, the Dakotas, they're open all year round. All of that. So cold water trolling is a big topic for me. I'm going to throw that at you just big. I've got some more specific questions down the pipe, but I'm going to throw that big topic on you. Where do we have to start with this? Where, you know, what's kind of the template to start this conversation?
So I love this topic. And when you had sent me that message out, it just made me smile because there's not been a lot of changes in fishing over the years. But one of the things that I can hang my hat on that is changed across the board is that I can remember, even I'm 28 years old, but I can remember when people would say you catch walleyes from Memorial Day to Labor Day. That's the time that you go target walleyes, and they can't be caught any other time of the year other than some ice fishing applications. But you know, over the last, you know, 15 years, it's really been dialed in on this cold water trolling for walleyes. Basically, if there's open water out there, it doesn't matter what time of year it is, you can absolutely target walleyes and catch them. We just use a little bit different techniques than we would when the water's warmer. The biggest thing being the speeds that we troll, which we can get into all the details, but if I had a cliff note it, the speeds that we troll, the style of baits that we fish. And when I say that, crankbaits. It's basically all you have to worry about when the water is cold is crankbaits, more specifically a minnow style crankbait. And using things like offshore tackle planer boards, trolling slow, spreading your lines out. The thing is when the water's cold, walleye have very slow metabolisms when the water's cold. When the water's warm, they have very high metabolisms. In layman's terms, when the water's warm, everything a walleye eats, he poops out almost instantly and he has to eat again. That's not the case when the water's cold. They'll eat their forage. They're content for a while. They don't feel like they have to constantly eat. And so we kind of have to spoon feed these fish when the water's cold. We slow our speeds down everywhere from 1 to 1.5 miles an hour and basically put these crankbaits right in front of these fish, going super slow and just trying to coax these fish into biting. As the water warms up, and I always get the question when we're doing seminars in the wintertime, is when is the water considered warm? And in my mind, walleye starts speeding up their metabolism when the water gets to about 50 degrees. So as 50 degrees and warmer, we start speeding up our presentation, and these walleyes will chase down our baits. But it seems like right now, if you were able to get out right now because we've had a horrible ice season, get the boat in the water, you're going to be trolling anywhere from 1 to 1.5 miles an hour, trolling minnow style baits like a Bill Lewis precise walleye crank, a husky jerk, a bandit. That's all about the same. You're looking for that long minnow style profile. And I don't care if you're fishing in New York or North Dakota and everywhere in between. If you're trolling for cold water walleye, you're going to be using that minnow style profile.
Let's dive into some of the details you're talking about. The minnow style baits, the speed, the profile. You've kind of already gotten into it. You're tickling on, you know, some of the scientific, some of the biology behind it. Anything else that you think we should go deeper into right away? I feel like, you know, the forage, identifying the forage and the minnow style baits for you. Is it, you know, match the hatch? Is the size that specific? Like maybe kind of dig into that a little bit. We'll try to wrap our heads around that.
Yeah, let's start by digging into crankbaits, because if you go to the store right now, whatever store you want to walk into, and you look down the shelf and there's hundreds and hundreds of different crankbaits, I think that it kind of gets daunting of where do you start. Let's not worry about color. That's the last thing I care about with a crankbait. It's the action of the crankbait that we're looking for that's so important, especially when the water's cold. If I had to do a big, broad overview of crankbaits, minnow-style crankbaits are predominantly used when the water's cold. Shad-style crankbaits are used when the water's warm. But there's actually a reason for that, and I can kind of break that down. Over the last 3 or 4 years, my dad and I developed the Bill Lewis Precise Walleye Crank, which is a minnow-style bait. And one of the things about developing that bait, it really opened my eyes to crankbaits in general and how little tiny things makes all the difference in the world. Things like hook size on the bait, things like whether you tie the bait direct or use a crosslock snap, you can go on and on and on about all the different things that changes the action of these baits. But when I say a minnow style bait, a long, skinny style bait, normally we're running a deep diving lip on these baits. So they got a deep lip and the dive curve is deeper. Across the board, it seems like in the springtime on cold water, really ice cold water, these fish like to be tight to the bottom. And as the water warms up, they'll start to suspend. But across the board, these minnow style baits, what they have is there's two types of actions with crankbaits. One is you'll have what I'll call the roll, right? If you can picture that crankbait going through the water, it's rolling side to side. That's giving that side to side flash. The second action we'll call a tail wag, right? It's that back and forth action. Now, if you look at a shad style bait in the water, it has a lot of side to side action, and it also has a lot of roll. So it has a ton of action. It's, you know, look at like a flicker shad in the water. It's rolling, but it's also got a tail wag at exactly the same time. And it doesn't matter how slow you pull that bait, it still has a lot of action. On a minnow style bait, what we're looking for in cold water specifically is more of a roll and less of that tail wag. So we're looking for less action. In a lot of cases, when you pull these minnow style baits at 1 mile an hour, you look at them in the water and you go, it's not doing anything. That's what we want. We want a bait that has very little action, a real tight roll, and almost like a stick in the water. And then again, as we speed up, the action of those baits speed up. But there's really just a handful, you know, across the board and all the traveling that we do, a handful of these minnow baits that just day in and day out catch. Of course, you know, it's easy for me to promote the PWC, the Bill Lewis bait, because we designed that bait. But obviously baits like the Flicker Minnow and Husky Jerks and Bandits, they all have that same characteristic of that rolling action when you slow them down at speed.
Where does sound, you know, I mean, crankbaits with, you know, with the rattle chambers and all that, where does sound come into play for you when we're, you know, talking this cold water? Typically it's clear, you know, the slower speeds, like, can sound, you know, sometimes benefit you or hurt you?
So I think that's a pretty controversial topic. And that's the cool thing about fishing is there's no right answers all the time. But across the board for me, like, I love a loud bait. I think that if the water's got some color to it, a loud bait is awesome. And even clean water, I'm perfectly okay with a loud bait. You know, if I looked at all the baits in my pole barn right now, by and large, the baits that I have the most confidence with are plastic baits that have a rattle. You know, balsa baits, they definitely have their place and their place to use. But across the board for me and my fishing, I like a bait that's loud. You know, walleyes across the board are sight feeders, right? Like, they're primarily sight feeders. But if they can hear that bait coming and maybe, you know, hear that bait coming through the water column and set up, I just feel like it gives us a little bit better opportunity. And one of the things with these rattles, if you look at them, they're not overly loud when we're trolling slow. So if we're going really slow, these baits aren't like ridiculously loud in the water. They just add a little bit of extra sound. You know, one of the things we didn't really touch on too is like size profile. You got to understand in the spring, the forage across the board, it doesn't matter where you are, the forage is as big as it's going to be. So you really don't be afraid to fish these big baits, because if you look at the food web and how things work, the minnows are as big as they're going to be. They haven't spawned yet in the spring. And so these fish are already used to eating a bigger forage. It's so these bigger minnow style baits. I think if you come from a guy that's used to having rod in hand, jigging minnow, thinking smaller presentations, you look at these big baits and you get a little bit nervous. Don't be afraid to fish these big lures. They have no problem eating these big profile baits.
Dude, I think that's a very, very valuable point in all this because, you know, I don't know how often you get the question, you know, but you know, I feel like in the spring, there is a lot of philosophy around, you know, being slow, maybe being subtle, you know, talking about all the things we're talking about already. And a lot of that stuff gets interpreted as, you know, finesse and getting smaller. It just gets interpreted that way. I've done it myself. I'm guilty with jig presentations all across the board. And it's just such a great reminder, especially coming into a season where, you know, many of us haven't been in a boat for a while. So you got to knock the rust off. And, you know, if nothing else, it's a great reminder, but I think that's a big learning curve. I think, you know, for people probably, you know, I take a lot away from that. And it's, yeah, just a great reminder that don't be scared of the size. Because yeah, everything you just said, fish being spooky, you mentioned getting the planer boards out, spreading your lines out. For you, you know, what is that balance between just spreading it out to search for fish, maybe in different depth zones, or maybe, you know, covering that water versus just getting it away from the boat? Talk to me a little bit about that and just kind of just how important and where the importance lies.
Yeah, I think it, you know, with planer boards, I think it definitely depends on where you're fishing. If you talk about Great Lakes walleye, you know, maybe this, I shouldn't go off on a limb and say this, but I really feel like Great Lakes walleye are afraid of nothing. They're not really that spooked by the presence of the boat. Doesn't matter if the water's clean, doesn't matter if it's dirty, we'll catch them right at the transom. We'll catch them, you know, on our outside planer boards and everything in between. It just seems like they're pretty fearless. When it comes to inland lake walleyes, there's definitely something to getting your lures out away from the boat and not being spooked by the presence of the boat. But I would say what a planer board does for me more than anything is it spreads my lines out and allows me to saturate the water column. So when you talk about trolling across the board, not just spring, but, you know, in the spring specifically too, we want to saturate the water column. You want to have some lines high, lines mid water column, lines deep. And it just kind of let these fish tell you, you know, where they're going to bite. You would think when you sometimes you mark these high fish that they're going to bite, but that's not always the case. Those high fish don't always want to go. So what I like to do to start my day, if I was going out on any body of water in the springtime, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to use my electronics and I'm going to drive around before I'd ever set a line. One of the things about trolling in the springtime, you're going slow, so you're not covering a lot of water. So it works a lot better to drive around with your electronics and try to find pods of fish that are suspended. Once you've found those fish, then you can set up on them. One of the things that I really like to do in the spring is to always troll going downwind. And the reason for that is I can control my speed better. I'm trolling into the wind. It's hard to keep a consistent speed. So I drive around, find them pods of fish, and then go ahead and go upwind of that pod of fish and to get ready to do a downwind troll over top of them. And planer boards allow me to spread my lines out. Now, one of the things that I would do is if I found these fish, I'm going to use the precision trolling app to figure out how much line I have to let out to get that crankbait down to a certain zone. So we'll just throw random numbers out. But if I'm marking fish at 15 feet down, I want to get my lures somewhere in that zone. One of the things with precision trolling at family company, we do a lot of testing on how much line you have to let out to get your lures to a certain depth. It's very accurate. And in some cases, you know, I try to tell anglers it's probably too accurate to what we need. What I mean by that is I could take a crankbait and plus or minus a couple inches, reduplicate those numbers over and over and over again. What you have to remember as a fisherman is that walleyes have eyes on the top of their head. They feed up in the water column. And so you want to be above these fish. I don't want to be right at the same level. And I definitely don't want to be below the fish. So I want to be above them. And how far above them really dictates to the water color. If the water's really clean, sometimes these fish will travel a long ways. If the water's really dirty, you might have to put it closer to their nose. But I'm using the precision trolling app to figure out how much line I have to let out to get that crankbait down to that certain zone. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to run a trolling pattern where my outside planer board is my highest line and my inside planer board is my deepest line. So as I get closer and closer to the boat, I'm progressively getting deeper and deeper and deeper. What that allows for is when I catch a fish on that outside planer board, I can release the board. And basically releasing the board is just giving the rod a little pop. It comes off that front clip release. We have a lot of videos on that on our YouTube channel. And basically now that board will swing over top of all your other lines because the crankbaits in front of it are deeper. Now that board swings to the back of the boat and I can fight that fish right up the back of the boat without clearing any other lines. And to me, that is the benefit of planer boards. I can run 6-8 rods and not have to touch anything else. If I catch a fish on one line, I can fight that fish and leave all 7 other lines still fishing. And that gives me a great opportunity for catching 2, 3, 4 fish at a time.
Devil's Lake, North Dakota is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. We talk about the fishing all the time on this show, but to find out what the lake and the community has to offer, which is way more than we ever talk about on this show, you can head to devilslakend.com and get all that. We're talking about the lodging and restaurant options and just the lay of the land and everything going on in the community. There's all kinds of stuff all summer long going on in and around the community of Devil's Lake. Also, our favorite, the fishing tab. It's going to give you real-time fishing reports, directions to fish cleaning stations and boat landings and shore fishing piers, which are awesome, by the way. Also, it's going to give you a list of options for boat rentals or guide services and bait shops. Everything that you need to plan your next adventure in Devil's Lake is at devilslakend.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. This JMO podcast is brought to you by Cedar Lake Sales in West Bend, Wisconsin. Cedar Lake Sales is Southern Wisconsin's largest Crestliner dealership, so whatever you're looking for, whether it's something family-oriented or a pontoon, maybe you're looking for a traditional fishing boat or step it up to something that you can travel around and fish tournaments in, they are well-known to have it all easy to check out in their huge indoor heated showrooms. Now, with a great service department and the confidence of their customers, Cedar Lake Sales is celebrating 55 years of trusted business. Again, if you are shopping for a boat, your shopping is not done until you've talked to a salesperson at Cedar Lake Sales. For more information on what they got, what they offer, head to the link in the description of this podcast. That's www.cedarlakesales.com. I think that's a skill that is appreciating itself in the walleye world, even in like one line states like Minnesota, where, you know, I don't think it even pays to run a line behind the boat. I think there's going to be scenarios where, all of us out west here are going to need to pick up on the things you guys are doing. You guys do it just because you get the lines available. You have the lines available and you can do all that. And there's just so much great trolling information that is learned out there on the Great Lakes and where you guys are at, that for those of us, you know, we might not have, we'd be running the same regulations as you. We can't have as many lines as you. But I think these are some skills that people ought to be developing. I know Forward Sonar really, you know, is kind of, you know, controls a lot of conversations. People want to buy more jig sticks and, you know, more spin tackle. But boy, oh boy, I tell you what, trolling is on the rise as well. And I think it's a lot of information like what you just said.
I agree to that because we do a lot of different styles of fishing at Fishing 411. I do a lot of forward facing sonar stuff. I do jigging and rigging and trolling. And, you know, we travel all across the country and fish a lot of different fisheries. And one of the things that I try to say in our seminars to kind of break it down, because there's the right application, you know, trolling is the right application at times, but it's not always the right application. And one of the things about the springtime and the reason why I think trolling is such an effective tool in the springtime is it depends on your environment. If you're going out on your personal home body of water and you're finding a lot of fish concentrated on maybe swept points or pieces of structure where there's a lot of fish in a tight area, trolling is not the answer in a lot of those cases, right? Because you have a lot of fish concentrated in a small area. It's way more, you know, it makes way more sense to stay in a small little area where those fish are. If I was to troll those fish, I would have to go over top of them, catch one or two, pick up all my lines, run back up again, and make short passes, pass over pass. Does it work? Absolutely. But it's a lot of work where you could sit there with a rod in hand and catch those fish on that windswept point. But when you have fish that are maybe in a basin that are spread out over a huge area, to try to pick out, even with forward-facing sonar, to try to pick out individual fish and cast to that fish and try to get that one fish to bite, or you can troll, put multiple lines out and troll over those fish. You know, I think about it all the time when I'm trolling. How many hundreds, if not thousands of fish do we troll past that don't even give us a second look? They have no interest in biting. And so I don't want to have to pick an individual fish and try to get that one to bite. I want to spread my lines out and troll over that basin. So I always try to tell people that if you have concentrated fish, jigging and rigging might make way more sense. But if you have fish that are spread out over a basin where you got a fish here, a fish there, it is really hard to beat trolling.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, those patterns, you know, even, you know, we got an early ice out potential this year that's kind of sparking a lot of these, you know, the popularity and the requests that I get for these topics. But even on an average year where you'll have cold fronts in the spring, or where, it, you know, you get a year where water temps just kind of struggle to get past 50, and you'll get like a, you know, 3 week window there, you know, during the season where it's just, it's cold. And your fish will spread out, you know, like the, you know, on big bodies of water, the spawn doesn't all happen on one day and all the fish, you know, are just on the exact same program. It's, man, it's like fish are spread out all the time. Like, you know, I can give myself tons of reasons why I should have trolled for big portions of the day when I just stuck it out with that jig and a minnow and I had, you know, and I really only did any work, you know, right in the morning or in the afternoon when the water warmed up, you know. Anyways,
I think that it just makes you an all-around better fisherman to have all of these different tools, right? Like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that trolling is the answer all the time and all I ever do is troll. I love trolling. It's where I cut my teeth, and I feel like it's probably what I'm most knowledgeable about in fishing is Great Lake style trolling. But we do all of it. And I think as any angler, to be a well-rounded, well-versed angler, you have to be able to know how to do all of it. Maybe you have some things that you have your strengths where you really enjoy doing that more than others. But it is good to have the fundamental basics of trolling down. And so you feel confident when the time comes to do that.
Let's incorporate sense a little bit. This is maybe a little bit of a personal question because I've gotten a little bit I've really gotten intrigued and I'm very curious and I'm trying to learn more and experiment more with scents. I think that, you know, scents have been sort of on the back burner in the walleye industry, you know, because, you know, just, you know, you look at the last 15 years, artificial baits have like, you know, just barely broke through. It's, you know, walleye fishing's, you know, like you started with it, it's like walleye fishing has only ever been when you can catch them on live bait. If you can't catch them on live bait, there's no, you know, you know, people don't fish walleyes. Now that's yeah, totally different. Like that's the deal. But I feel like scents are just barely catching on. I think some of the best tournament anglers are, you know, I mean, they talk about it, but I don't know if they talk about it to the extent that they're actually doing it. I think scents are a big player at times. And I feel like I'm just kind of learning that. So again, this is a kind of a personal question, but what's your opinions? What's your applications? What's your recommendations in and around scents when you're on crankbaits or just sensing all in the spring during cold water?
Yeah, so I'm a huge advocate of fishing scent. Any video you watch of Fishing 411, you probably hear us talking about ProCure. And it's not a sales gimmick. It's not something that, I mean, if you don't want to go out and buy a bottle of scent, that's on you. I truly believe that it puts more fish in the boat day in and day out for us. But where I feel like scent makes the biggest improvement is in cold water situations, cold water or cold front situations, if that makes sense. When walleyes have, you know, high metabolisms in the summertime, do I feel like scent is important every single day? Absolutely not. Does it ever hurt? I don't think it ever hurts. But there's some things to know about if you're going to fish scent. It's not something that you just put on the lure and hope for the best type of thing. I think that there's a real science to it. And luckily, like for us, we do a lot of trout and salmon fishing, and like a Pacific King smells in parts per billion, right? Their nose is almost 10 times stronger than a white-tailed deer. And it's a huge part of what they decide to do. If they're going to feed, the smell or the scent of something is a very important thing. So being from the Great Lakes, the fact that we fish for trout and salmon all the time, it was easy for us to take that same scent mentality into walleye fishing. But there's more to it than that, because I feel like in general, walleyes don't have the nose of a king salmon, right? They don't smell in the same way. So it's not as important, meaning that we can skimp on a few things and still have great success. But one of the things with scent, we'll talk about ProCure, like a super gel ProCure. It's very sticky and it's made with real bait fish. So that's one of the things that in my mind with scent, couple things that I struggle with the scent fishing. One is a lot of these chemically made scent companies out there, something that was made in a lab to smell like what it's supposed to. And if you look at a lot of them, they're water-based, which to me seems like a really big sales gimmick, right? You take something that's water-based, put it on your lure, put the lure in the water. What's going to happen? The scent's going to just basically wash off. And so I feel like when you're looking for scents, an oil-based scent is really important. And the reason why we personally gravitated towards ProCure is the fact that it is made with real bait fish. If it says smelt on the bottle, it's smelt that are ground up into this emulsion and turn into this gel. If it says alewife, or if it says emerald shiner, or whatever it says on the bottle, it's the real thing ground up. But when it comes to fishing scent, it takes a little bit more than just throwing it on your lure, because if you do that over time, you have to clean these baits. And so I basically go through a scent fishing regimen. And what I do is I take a Tupperware container and I put it at the back of my boat, because at the end of the day, I really don't want to be spending time during the day cleaning the scent off of my lures. I just want to be fishing. And I think we all don't really want to do the dishes while we're out doing fun stuff, right? So I want to clean these baits, and you have to, right? It's a very acidic thing. Like ProCure, when you put them on these crankbaits, you have to get it back off again. You can't just take that crankbait, throw it in your box. Over time, you risk it actually taking the paint off of these lures. And because it's so acidic, then you deal with things like your hooks rusting. And so what I do is I take a Tupperware container at the back of my boat. When I'm done fishing a bait, I take that bait off, I throw it in the Tupperware container. At the end of the day, I got a whole Tupperware container full of a bunch of ProCured up baits. Then when I'm done fishing at the end of the day, I take them in, I clean them up with hot soap and water and get the ProCure off of them, put them back in my Plano box. Now, guys that haven't fished scent will go, well, geez, that sounds like a lot of work. And it is. It's a decent amount of work fishing scent. But if you stick with that regimen, for one, your baits are going to last a lot longer. You're not going to have to worry about the actual scent ruining your baits. But I'm here to tell you, day in and day out, I feel like it puts more fish in the boat. When I tell people when they're getting into fishing scent, because I did the same thing, is I would run scented baits on one side of the boat and not on the other, and let it prove to me that day in and day out, we're getting more bites on one side of the boat trolling with scent versus not trolling with scent. I don't think it's going to take a horrible day of fishing and make it the most unbelievable day of fishing you've ever had, but I think it'll take a tough day of fishing and make it a good day. And it might take a good day and make it a great day. And so I feel like it's definitely getting you a handful more bites throughout the day. It's just that regimen. You know, if you think in your mind, basically, you know, if your armpits stink and you put deodorant on, your armpits still stink, right? So you don't want to have old scent on a lure and then put new scent on that lure because it's been rolling around in your Plano box for weeks and weeks and weeks. I want to start with a bait that's clean, that has no foreign odors on it, no scent on it. And then I like to personally match the hatch. If I'm fishing a place like Lake Erie and there's a lot of gizzard shad, it's one of my favorite scents. These fish are already gorging themselves on gizzard shad. Maybe you're in a fishery where there's a lot of emerald shiners and that's what these fish are really feeding on. Then you could use an emerald shiner scent. But I'm a huge advocate of matching the hatch with these baits. Yeah, I definitely am a huge fan of scent. We fish it a lot. I've kind of gotten to the point because we've been fishing it for so long, it's just a daily regimen. I feel like every day it's going to put more fish in the boat, and so I do it. but I definitely know that it's a stepping stone to get there. And the cool thing is, like, a ProCure bottle, you can buy a little 2-ounce bottle. It's not very much money. It's going to last you a long time. And you buy that bottle and just prove it to yourself. You do little experiments on the water, run one side with, one side without. And I think you'll come to the same conclusion that I did, which is it puts more fish in the boat.
Should we talk a little bit about color? Do you have any sort of opinions on color? Can we, you know, I think people like hearing about color. They just want to hear us talk about it. Anything in and around that we can just kind of talk about, but not to blow it up like it's a real big deal.
No, I think we definitely covered, talk about that for just a little bit, because color is a tough one for me personally, because I think that I use color to refine a presentation, not define a presentation. And especially with crankbaits, right? There's the action of a crankbait is so important, and getting that right action, that minnow style profile, like we've talked about in cold water, getting that right action is the number one most important thing. And then color comes into play. And you start looking at crankbaits, the custom color phase on crankbaits will make a man go crazy on how many different color variations there are. But if I had to give you like a really brief overview of color, the way that I look at color, pretty much everywhere that I fish, is that if the water is really clean, I tend to go with more natural colors and more metallic colors, things like chromes and chartreuse, really, really bright, flashy, natural colors. You look at a lot of minnows that swim around, they have a lot of bright, silvery flash to them. And so if the water's clear, I tend to go with more metallic-y style colors. And if the water is dirty, I tend to go with darker colors, which is hard to get your mind wrapped around. But if you really look at these baits in dirty colored water, you'll see that they cast a bigger shadow. So if I was fishing really chalky, nasty brown water, I'd be looking at baits that are black or purple or really dark colored baits. So overcast days, more painted color baits, sunny days, more metallic colors. Dirty water, I use darker color baits, cleaner water, more natural colors. And then you can kind of let your imagination go crazy on all the different color variations that there are on crankbaits. And for me to tell you, you're not going to go buy them, I'd be lying to you, because I'm guilty as everybody. I'm walking the store and go, I don't have that color. And I put it in my tackle box and I take it out fishing with me. So it's a rabbit hole to go down to with color, but kind of that what I would just said with a brief overview, that's kind of where I get my starting point. If I go out on a place like Lake Erie and it's super dirty in the springtime, I'm probably not going to have a lot of bright metallic baits on. I'm probably going to have a lot of dark colored baits on, because they just seem to cast a bigger shadow. And walleyes are sight feeders. If they can't see the bait, they can't eat it.
There it is, man. There it is, dude. That is a great way to wrap it up. I think that gives us a lot to chew on. Just some unbelievably great pointers there. And for some of us, we might be reminders. We're kind of knocking a little bit of our own rust off coming into this season. And for a lot of us, I haven't done a ton of trolling. I'm just learning. I'm learning from the ground up. But I think the massive takeaways here, I think, because even for a lot of people that might consider themselves relatively experienced anglers, been fishing, spring, cold water, rivers or, lakes, wherever, their whole life, but maybe they've just spent a lot of time in the spring casting. They might have to admit that they're a novice troller, and it's just great to get this information. I just think that it's a big one. It's one of the bigger spring topic recommendations that I get here on the podcast. So I try to do at least a couple a year, and I've had some really great ones. We spend a lot of time talking rivers, obviously, but this year with the forecasted early spring throughout the Midwest, and the possibility of, especially like out here in the Dakotas, the walleye season's year round, there's going to be a lot of smaller sloughs that are open. And, they're not our home bodies of water. They're not the bodies of water we got a ton of memories on, but it's a great fishing opportunity. And you get out and you got to break it down. You don't have waypoints in a lot of these scenarios. You don't have memories anywhere. So you got to break it down in no better way, I guess, in my opinion, than to start trolling and figuring that out. And I think that this is going to be one of those years where spring cold water trolling is gonna shine a little bit. I think it certainly could. That's definitely, I think it's on the rise. And so, great conversation. Anyways, Jake, again, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for, you know, even on short notice, I appreciate it so much. And we'll be in touch. Why don't we wrap it up like this? We'll just promote yourself and where people can find you if they have questions or find your content. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. So Fishing 411 Television is the name of the television show. It's on the Sportsman's Channel and the World Fishing Network. It airs year-round. If you can't see it on the Sportsman's Channel, World Fishing Network, there's always the good old-fashioned YouTube, the Fishing 411 YouTube channel. It's completely free. You can also sign up for our weekly newsletter, and that's just us dropping little short content blurbs weekly sent to your email, so you don't miss anything that we put out there. But if there's something specific trolling related, we probably have a video of it on our YouTube channel, so you can search that. Fishing 411 is about information. 19 years of shooting video and television, and our goal is to share as much information as possible. The way we look at it is, if you guys go out, buy fishing boats, fishing equipment, rods, reels, tackle, and you don't have success, next year you're golfing, and we don't want that. We want as many people fishing as possible and have as much success as possible. So I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, man. God dang.